Welcome to UK Health Radio. You are listening to the Speech and Language Therapy Show, hosted by Shamina Rabi, a consultant speech and language therapist and founder of Unlocking Language, an award-winning independent practice that provides speech and language therapy to both adults and children. She is dedicated to raising awareness about speech, language, communication and swallowing difficulties and empowering those who have them.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Speech and Language Therapy Show on UK Health Radio, your Good Feel Radio. Today we're going to be talking about swallowing difficulties in adults. Now, the term for swallowing difficulties is known as dysphagia, so that's the medical term. And in simple terms, it is when you have difficulties to swallow. Difficulties to eat and drink, and even sometimes swallowing your saliva. Now, most people under the age of 65 don't have this difficulty unless they were born with a medical condition that impacts on swallowing. So just kind of thinking about your normal functioning adult. If we do have a swallow dysfunction, or if it's a friend or a family member, it can be very devastating because when swallowing becomes impaired, it impacts on daily life significantly. Like breathing and talking, swallowing is essential to everyday life. While I was researching for this podcast, I wanted to sort of give some accurate facts. And there seemed to be a lot of discrepancy around how many times the average human being swallows in a day. But I'm going to go with the source from the Australian Speech and Language Therapy Organization, which suggests we swallow between 500 to 700 times a day, around three times an hour when we sleep, which results in sort of once per minute while we're awake. And of course, even more during meals. However, there were a lot of sources that were indicating a higher number that we would swallow a day. Many sources indicated 2,000 times or 3,000 times the number of times we swallow, but it is a high number. And in addition to that, there are around 50 pairs of muscles in the mouth and in the throat, and around 12 nerves that all need to work together for the swallowing process to take place. So it is a very, very complicated process and one that we don't really think about. So as I said, the medical term for swallowing difficulties is dysphagia, which arises from the Latin dys, which means difficulty, and the Greek word phagia, which means eating or swallowing. So dysphagia literally means difficulty eating or swallowing. Now, thinking about the stats in the UK, it is a common problem and it's becoming even more common, as it affects around 11% of adults living in the community, and it's a more common issue in older people, particularly those who've had a stroke or a neurological condition. Around 40 to 70% of stroke patients or survivors will have dysphagia, 60 to 80% of people with neurological conditions will have dysphagia, generally 13% of older people. Because as one advances with age, the muscle strength and muscle dexterity reduces, and this impacts on swallowing. And 51% of frail older people in care homes also have swallowing difficulties. And just kind of thinking about the stats in the USA, dysphagia among the elderly is a significant problem, with estimates of between 300,000 to 600,000 cases, new cases per year. And that 30 to 40% of nursing home residents have dysphagia. So it is a common issue. And as the elderly population grows, so does dysphagia. So as I was saying, it's interesting to think about what swallowing is and the process and what we do to swallow, as the process is quite automatic. Swallowing takes place in three phases. You have a voluntary phase, so what takes place in the mouth, and then it becomes involuntary. And just for a good swallow, there is a lot of coordination of various muscles in the mouth and the throat. As I said, several nerves are used to get that sensory information going to help that swallow take place. And then the brain controls what happens. And the particular area in the brain is the brainstem, which allows that swallow to take place. So swallowing normally requires extra effort, or swallowing, as I said, takes place in the brainstem. That reflex is in the brainstem, such as other reflexes, such as sneezing, coughing and gagging, which are all reflexes triggered by the brainstem once the body gets that signal and allows it to happen naturally. So let's think about the actual process of swallow. So as I said, the swallow has three phases, and these are named after the places where most of the action takes place. So your first phase is your oral phase, which takes place in the mouth cavity. And here, it's important to have adequate teeth or good dentures so that we can chew the food. And you may hear me use the term bolus today, because when we do have food and drink in the mouth and it becomes quite soft and mushy, this becomes a bolus, and this is what we refer to as speech and language therapists. So in the oral phase, chewing takes place, and you need good teeth to be able to chew your food. You then produce saliva, which mixes with the food and softens it. And here your digestive process starts taking place, because the enzymes in the saliva start to break down the proteins. And the food, which then starts to become a bolus, becomes more mushier. And this soft, mushed food is then moving from the front of the mouth to the back of the mouth. And this is done by a wonderful muscle called the tongue. So the tongue is the crucial component to swallowing in the oral phase, because it is transiting the bolus. So that food and drink, it is moving it across the tongue. So from the tip of the tongue, or from the middle of the tongue, right to the back of the tongue, where the swallow gets triggered. It's amazing that to think about the dexterity of the muscles within the tongue and what it has to do to be able to operate this swallow. So the tip of the tongue will then move upwards towards the ridge of the mouth, which is the hard bit behind your front teeth at the top, and it pushes the food backwards to the middle of the tongue, and then there's a lot more contact between the tongue and the soft palate, the tongue and the hard palate, because it's breaking down the food and making it more mushier. The tongue then allows the bolus to become essentially a cohesive ball in the middle of the tongue, and then moves that even further backwards towards the back of the tongue. Now, when the bolus, the food or drink, reaches the back of the tongue, this is where there are sensory receptors, which are based at the back of the tongue and in the throat. And when they receive enough signals, these go to the brain to trigger the swallow reflex. Ah, there's something to swallow. So your food is chewed up and ready to swallow at this stage. And what was so far a voluntary stage, so where you've had more control of chewing, realizing there's something on the side of your mouth, being able to use your tongue to sweep it. Once it reaches the back of the tongue and the sensory receptors are all triggered, the involuntary stage of swallowing starts to take place. So the involuntary automatic process of swallowing takes place in the pharynx. Now, in your throat, you have two tubes. You have the pharynx and the larynx. The larynx is what we also know as the windpipe. So we need this for breathing. And we have two muscles at the top of the windpipe, known as the vocal folds. And just at rest, these remain open so that we can breathe, so that air can go up and down the tube, out of the mouth and into the lungs. When we are talking, these two muscles will be constantly opening and closing so that we can produce voice, and at the same time they are vibrating. Now, what's interesting is when we swallow, we have to stop breathing, because we can't breathe and swallow at the same time. So what happens here is that the vocal folds will close together so that food or drink will not enter your airway. The larynx moves up to create some pressure, and the epiglottis will cover it. So that path to your airway and to your lungs is closed off. At the same time, in the mouth, the soft palate and the uvula will move up and back to close off the bottom part of the nasal passage, which is the hole. It's a path between your mouth and your nose. And so the pathways to your nose and the pathways to your lungs are closed off, which means the food and drink have to go down the pharynx, which leads to your esophagus and into your stomach. So it allows the food and drink to go down into the right pipe. Now, the wonderful tongue, as I said before, actually goes down all the way into your throat. So, when we think about a tongue, we think about the tongue in the mouth. But actually, that particular muscle continues to go down into the throat. And using the muscles of the tongue and the muscles of the throat, and we call that the base of the tongue. So using the muscles of the base of the tongue and the throat, a squeezing movement takes place and the food and liquid is squeezed down the pharynx and enters into the esophagus when a muscle at the top of the esophagus opens up. And as it goes down to the esophagus, we start the third phase of swallowing. And this is where there are a wave of muscle contractions known as the peristalsis that moves the food and drink quite nicely downwards into the stomach. Now, it's taken quite a few minutes to explain the process of swallowing and what happens when we have one mouthful. So, you know, if we're thinking about it practically, we eat and drink very quickly. You know, we'll quickly wash down our tea, we'll quickly have our meal. But so much is going on when we are eating and drinking and swallowing. So imagine if you do have a dysfunction, if you are experiencing difficulties with your swallowing, it can be devastating, and it can really change things for that person with dysphagia, both socially, emotionally, and in terms of safety. So dysphagia, having difficulties with swallowing, has many possible causes and can happen, as I said, most frequently in older adults. Any condition that weakens or damages the muscles and nerves which are used for swallowing can cause dysphagia. For example, people with diseases of the nervous system, such as cerebral palsy or Parkinson's disease, often have problems swallowing. Additionally, neurological conditions such as a stroke or a head injury, so when there has been change to the brain, damage to the brain, this can weaken or affect the coordination of the swallowing muscles or limit the sensation in the mouth and the throat. Aging can also cause dysphagia. Age-related changes affect also head and neck anatomy and physiology, which increases the risk of dysphagia. Your tongue dexterity and the movement and the strength and the motion resistance that's required by the tongue is much weaker. It is also slower. The actual reflex of the swallow trigger the actual reflex of the swallow trigger is also slower, and just the general movements and that general coordination that I discussed within the three phases just slows down. And this can impact on swallowing because it's really timely. You know, you've got the food and drink in your mouth, it needs to get to the sensory receptors, the swallow needs to be triggered, and then needs to go down to the pharynx. You need to protect your airway, and for all of this to take place, it has to happen in quite a timely, efficient manner. But with aging, as muscles become weaker and slower, that efficiency reduces. And these changes contribute to older people being more vulnerable to dysphagia as a result of decreased functional reserve. In addition, there other causes are head and neck cancer, esophageal difficulties, other neurological conditions like multiple sclerosis, motor neuron disease, and then also dementia and Alzheimer's, which can make it difficult to chew and swallow. So thinking about these conditions that can cause dysphagia, let's discuss some of the symptoms that you may see of a loved one or somebody or of a friend, or that you may feel yourself. Now, some symptoms can be obvious and some are more subtle and ambiguous. So symptoms-wise, having an actual difficulty to swallow foods or fluids. So if you're experiencing, or if you know someone who's experiencing, oh, that was a bit more trickier to swallow, or they complain that there's pain on swallowing, that is a symptom. Coughing or choking during or after meals. Now, this is a big symptom because when you are coughing or when you are choking, it means that the food or drink has entered the airway. So remember how I spoke about how the airway gets closed off because the larynx moves upwards and forwards, covering it up with the epiglottis. This process doesn't take place, and so food and drink are entering your airway. And the reason you cough is because it hits the vocal folds, and it's our natural reflexive reaction of the body to cough and to warn you that something is entering your airway, because if it's entering your larynx, then it's going to go and sit in your lungs. And if it does go and enter your lungs, unfortunately, this can lead to a pneumonia, which is the fatal consequence of dysphagia. Just going back to the actual symptoms that you would see, they would be unintentional weight loss, throat clearing. any sort of throat clearing can indicate that there is material sitting in the throat, in the airway again. If you have a wet or gurgly voice, again during eating or after eating, so what that usually means is that food or drink, instead of going into the lungs, has actually, it has entered your airway, but it's it has entered your larynx, but it's sitting on your vocal cords, and so the quality of your voice has changed. If you have a temperature, if you're getting shivers and chills, if you're noticing that the breathing pattern has changed again whilst you're eating and drinking, if you notice any food or liquid traveling back up through the throat or to the nose, or through the nose during or after swallowing, feeling of food or liquids being stuck in the throat, you still feel like it's there, or feeling that it's in the chest and it's not going down properly, heartburn, dehydration, excessive secretion, so having excessive saliva, drooling, having any food or drink leaking from the mouth. These are all signs and symptoms of dysphagia. Also forgot to mention, you can also experience some gagging after or during the swallow. So if you are experiencing any of the symptoms or know of someone, then in this case, it would be really important to speak to your GP. So your GP is the first point of call if you're in the community, and let them know that you're experiencing swallowing difficulties. They'll have a chat with you to see if you need to see a speech therapist, and in most cases you would see a speech language therapist. Now, our role in terms of managing swallowing difficulties is we would do an assessment first. We would look to see, we would want to see you eating and drinking, so we'll give you something to eat and drink in the session, and actually place our hand on your larynx, pharynx, as you swallow, watch what you're doing with your mouth when you're swallowing, to give us a good idea of what is going wrong with the swallow, and also what are your strengths during the swallow process. Once we've done the assessment, we'll then discuss with you what we found and whether there are risks of aspiration. So, as I said before, aspiration is when food and drink enters your airway and can lead to aspiration pneumonia, because that material then goes and sits in your lungs. And what leads to the pneumonia is the bacteria which is present in that material. And unfortunately, it can be fatal. So it is really important to ensure that we can put strategies and systems in place to avoid aspiration pneumonia. And I'm going to quickly mention at this point about penetration. When food and drink enter our airway and sit on the vocal folds, this is known as when the bolus enters the airway and sits on the vocal folds but does not go down into the lungs, and this is penetration. So aspiration is when material goes below the true vocal folds and sits into your lungs, and penetration is when it just sits above the vocal folds. During the assessment, if we feel we need more information, we will then refer you for an instrumental assessment, which is usually a vigifluoroscopy or a FEES. And this is where we use instruments to assess your swallowing more objectively. So, for example, a vigifluoroscopy would take place in an X-ray department, and the FEES would take place either in a speech therapy clinic or jointly with an ENT consultant. And it's where we place the camera through the nose, so that we can see what is actually happening when you are swallowing, what is actually happening when you're eating and drinking, why is it that you're aspirating, why is food and drink going down the wrong way. And we usually need to do that when we can't figure out at bedside what the reasons are for you to be at risk of, for you to be aspirating. So I often get asked, is dysphagia curable? Will I be able to eat and drink again? This can vary between people and depends on the diagnoses, where you are in terms of the stages of your dysphagia. But many people do make a full recovery and can go back to eating and drinking. I'm going to talk a little bit about what do we do then if you do have dysphagia. So as speech and language therapists, once we've done the assessment, we can recommend a few options. One option is having modified food and drink. So this is when normal drinks are not safe to swallow, because if we think about water, just normal water, it's thin, its viscosity is quite fast, quick moving. So when you're swallowing it, it goes down very quickly. Now, if I've got a patient who's got a neurological condition such as a stroke, and you know, the muscles are really weak on one side, they may not be able to cope with the viscosity and the fastness of water, and therefore when they're swallowing water, it's going down quite quickly and into the wrong way, because the muscles are not operating as timely and efficiently as they should for the swallow to take place. So in this case, I would recommend this client to be on thickened fluids. So thickened fluids is when we add a powder to whatever we're drinking, so whether it's water, a fizzy drink, tea, thin soups, and we thicken it. And if we think of something much more thicker, like a really thick milkshake, when you're swallowing it, it would take longer to transit from the beginning of the mouth to the back of the mouth, and it would take longer to go down, which gives all the muscles enough time and all the nerves enough time to get the swallow going. So recommending modified food and drink is a large part of speech and language therapy recommendations. And in terms of food, we might recommend food being cut up into small pieces. Perhaps you need a softer consistency. And in some cases, we can recommend a puree consistency. And we often recommend that when someone has, you know, real difficulties, perhaps at the oral phase, so they're not really able to chew and break down food, they might have a very, very dry mouth, and the muscles are really weak, so they can't, you know, break down food and move it from the front to the back of the mouth. So something that's much more puree and requires less effort and is easier to slide down would be an option for them. So that's modified food and drink. And there are guidelines that help the therapist to decide what type of modified intake it should be, because there's different types of thickened liquids. You've got, you know, just thickened a little bit, and then you've got very thick liquids. And that, again, all depends on that swallow process and the condition and the medical diagnosis and all the contributing factors. And so I do believe that dysphagia management is a multidisciplinary approach. Yes, speech therapist does have you know, a large say in the swallowing and what to recommend, but it is a very multidisciplinary approach, and it's important to work with everyone, including the patient and the family. Because if you are changing, you know, when we are changing the patient's diet, there are social implications. You know, if we're recommending thickened fluids and puree diets, it impacts on their social, so as I said, it impacts on it has got social implications, because, you know, a big part of going out is when we go out to eat and go out to restaurants and mealtimes at home. And, you know, the family and the patient have to really think about what is safest for them, and can they access that wherever they're going to. So diet modifications are based on what the patient can manage safely. And in some cases, we may feel that the patient is not safe to eat or drink at all. And we would then recommend a dietitian to see the patient, because we feel that the patient will benefit from some sort of tube feeding. And then the dietitian will recommend whether the patient needs an NG tube or a PEG feed, or what would be appropriate to keep the patient's nutrition going. So just a quick note, thickening a patient's liquids is a decision that should not be made lightly. And as I said, it's always individualized per patient medical history. You know, as we know, the thicker the viscosity, the slower it moves, therefore it makes it easier to swallow. However, bearing in mind, thick liquids can also be aspirated, and it can sometimes take longer to recover because the liquids are quite thick. So it's necessary to monitor the amount of liquids that the patient drinks in order to keep hydrated. And that is an issue that we have when we do place patients on thickened foods and modified diet, because food and drink is different, and thickened liquids aren't the best tasting, then patients sometimes will not eat and drink as much as they should. And so it's important to make sure that they're hydrated, whether they need to be topped up with fluids from a different way. So monitoring hydration by keeping an eye on the patient's blood levels and creatine is really important. Then there are behavioral approaches for dysphagia. So that's where we're thinking about, yes, they can eat and drink, but what else can we do with the process of eating and drinking so that it is much more safer? For example, alternating small bites with small sips, or after every six mouthfuls, they need a liquid wash to help clear the oral and pharyngeal phase because there's a lot of residue lying around. Whether after every mouthful, they need to have two swallows instead of one swallow, again, to really help clear any residue, or whether they're somebody that need multiple swallows. So we can recommend behavioral approaches and changes to help make that process of eating and drinking much more safer. And then we have postural changes. Postural strategies are used to help change the way that the bolus flows through the actual swallowing mechanism. So the behavioral approaches are more around what can we do from an environmental point of view, and it's quite good to also speak to the occupational therapist about that. But then postural changes are actual postural strategies that we can use whilst we are swallowing. So specific postures are used to compensate for particular types of swallowing difficulties by changing the way that the food will move through the pharynx. And often it's these are the types of patients that we would refer for the instrumental assessments like the videofluoroscopy that I spoke about earlier. Examples of postural changes might be a head tilt. This is where you move the head to your better side and the bolus is redirected through oral cavity and oral bolus transport is improved because it's using the stronger side, the stronger muscles. You may have a head rotation where you twist the head to the weaker side so that the weaker side is closed off and the bolus travels to the stronger side. This helps to avoid any pocketing. And when compared to a neutral head position, rotating the head to the left or the right increases pharyngeal contraction pressure at the level of the folliculi and piriform sinus, which are little pockets in your throat. And it can just improve overall coordination of the swallow. And another popular postural strategy is the chin tuck, and this is where you put the chin down, where you place your chin down to your chest while you're swallowing, and this is to move the bolus anteriorly and to an anterior position. It prevents premature spillage and widens the folliculi, so that spillage will hesitate. They're giving more time for your vocal folds to close, thereby reducing that risk of aspiration. So the postural changes are a really effective way of allowing someone to perhaps eat more of a normal diet and have normal fluids, but that they need extra support with their muscles for that swallowing efficiency. Then there are therapeutic dysphagia strategies, for example, sensory strategies, and these include changing the volume of fluid in your mouth, the texture, the temperature or taste, therefore changing the sensory feedback, which is provided by the food or drink, usually at the level of what's going on in the mouth. And thermal stimulation is part of this. So if somebody is able to move the food and drink from the front of the mouth to the back and chew and break it down, but then as it gets to the back of the mouth, it's taking ages for the swallow to trigger. We know that there is something that sensory is going on, and we can do particular therapy around that. This is all part of swallow rehabilitation, and speech language therapists have a very important part in being able to rehabilitate you or your loved one back to either your baseline or back to as much of normality with eating and drinking. Then there are motor and coordination. There is motor and coordination therapy for swallowing difficulties. So this is where various exercises can be done to improve the range of motion of the lips, the tongue and jaw, to improve coordination, to improve the vocal folds coming together, to improve tongue-based retraction. When we decide to give motor exercises, we will have very clear goals and clear targets about what we're trying to achieve. Which muscle are we targeting? Why are we achieving that muscle? Why are we targeting that muscle? So range of motion exercises assist with the structural or tissue damage. Resistant exercises are there to strengthen muscles. And then lastly, we have swallowing maneuvers. Now, we can teach a patient to swallow differently, and various swallowing maneuvers are used to change that swallow physiology. Each swallowing maneuver is utilized for very specific diagnoses, and this should only be used by a speech language therapist and provided by a speech language therapist. So I'm not really going to go into too much detail about the types of maneuvers that are out there, but there are quite a few different swallowing maneuvers. So instead of using the normal swallow trigger that we would do, we would reteach the patient to perhaps add one or two things to that swallowing process so that they can swallow much more safely. So it's vital to note that swallowing treatment is not one size fits all. Along with knowing the type and the characterizations of your dysphagia, we must also take into consideration everything that is going on with the patient internally and externally. And this all includes past medical history, current diagnosis, current state of health, awareness, physical and mental abilities, and so much more. And I'm not going to go into detail, but I just want to touch on risk feeding. Now, this is a growing area, and I will definitely have a dysphagia specialist that works with risk feeding come onto one of the shows at a later point. But risk feeding is when a person continues to eat and drink despite a significant risk of aspiration and or choking. This option is often appropriate when ensuring the quality of life is the highest priority, because it allows continued enjoyment, comfort, pleasure, and social interaction associated with eating and drinking. And this decision to proceed with risk feeding is made ultimately by the patient, but if they're unable to make the decision, then by the next of kin, by their family, alongside the medical team. So we discuss risk feeding is a decision that is often made at the end of life, where interventions are deemed more futile, and a person is said to be risk feeding when they continue eating and drinking orally, knowing that food or fluid is entering the lungs and that there is a high chance that they will develop a pneumonia. What I did forget to mention is about silent aspiration. Now, silent aspiration is when food and drink is entering the wrong way, is going down the wrong way and is entering your lungs, but this is known as silent aspiration because you don't cough. So the food and drink enters, goes through your vocal folds, down your airway, into your lungs, and you have not coughed, and this is known as silent aspiration. And as I said, one of the key indicators of somebody aspirating is that they will cough, because that is what our body does. It's a natural reflex. And if someone is not coughing but they're still aspirating, then the cause for the silent aspiration is a sensory cause, that the nerves are and the sensory receptors are not working as effectively. Okay, so as I said, if you're experiencing any swallowing difficulties or have a loved one or know of someone, then please speak to your GP, who can then refer to the speech and language therapist. Although the title of our profession, speech and language therapist, indicates we mainly work with speech and language, we do work, we are the profession that work with swallowing difficulties. And I think we sort of took that hat on as our anatomy and knowledge of the voice and communication at such an expert level meant that we could really understand and diagnose and treat swallowing difficulties, because they are the same muscles, almost the same muscles that are used for talking, using voice and swallowing. So speech and language therapists can help you and can help caregivers understand the swallowing process, as well as offer you strategies to make swallowing easier. We can help you to assist in determining the safest liquid consistency and solids for a person with dysphagia to consume, and can also offer you exercises, as I discussed, to increase the oral and pharyngeal function. So I hope you've found today's podcast radio show useful. If you do have any questions or any comments regarding today's show, in terms of swallowing difficulties for adults, or if you'd like more information on a particular topic in this area, then please do get in touch with me, and you can contact me at info@unlockinglanguage.co.uk. and for more information on swallowing difficulties, have a look at my website, www.unlockinglanguage.co.uk. and I will see you all next week. Bye bye.